Good afternoon. This is Tamara reading the Decatur Herald and Review for Wednesday, May 28th. Let's start our reading on the front page. From Valerie Wells in Decatur. We have a photo of Evelyn Morse, 9, and Cora Spain, 10, working on a craft in the Children's Department of the Decatur Public Library during sign-ups for the summer reading program on Tuesday, May 27th. From the Decatur Public Library, sun's out, get your books out. Library's summer reading fun kicks off with zoo critter visit. Isaiah Henson loves books about police, army, and firefighters. But he also likes funny books, said his mom, Cecily. She was holding one of those for him, This Cowgirl Ain't Kidding About the Potty, by Sarah Glenn Fortson. Things that are funny capture his attention, Cecily Henson said. We love reading. We read every single day. It builds his vocabulary, comprehension skills, reading skills, and it's nice to open up a good book and start reading. The two of them were part of the large crowd visiting the Children's Department at Decatur Public Library on Tuesday to sign up for the summer reading program. Just within the first 90 minutes, said Library Assistant John Sherrill, 161 children had registered for the program. And counting the ones that had registered online in advance, 590 kids are registered so far. Tuesday's event included a visit from Scoville Zoo's Mobile Zoo, which include a guinea pig, a couple of bunnies, some snakes, a kookaburra, and an African ring-neck dove. Children could gently pet all of them except the kookaburra, whose name is Irwin, but Irwin didn't mind if people wanted to talk to him and admire him. Zoo volunteer Mike Reitzel, who was at the table with the birds, said he's a retired mail carrier, and his wife suggested volunteering at the zoo, partly because she knows he loves animals and partly to give him a reason to get out of the house. I take animals out to schools and do programs and spend an hour talking about all of them, he said. The kookaburra, he said, is his favorite. The summer reading program is largely unchanged from last year, Cheryl said. We have a new mascot, he said, pointing out that he was wearing the same pattern tropical shirt that the cartoon mascot, Gordon the Taper, was wearing on the poster. We have a tried-and-true system that has worked for about 5 or 6 years now. It's a kind of a way to organize things and great local sponsors that provide reading rewards. On page A3, we have a photo of Library Assistant John Sherrill signing up Brielle Brown, 6, Ileana Greenwood, 6, and Mila Greenwood, 3, for the summer reading program, with parents Gabby Fletcher and Sarah Greenwood at the Decatur Public Library. An adult creates an account, if they don't already have one, and the family receives a log to keep track of the books the child reads or listens to. Rewards are available every time a child reaches a milestone along the way, ranging from Papa Murphy's, Monocle's, and McDonald's coupons, book bags, all the way up to a free book. Visit decaturlibrary.org/kidsread2025 for more information. There's still plenty of time to sign up. Children who read during summer break are more prepared for the next school year and less likely to experience learning loss during the weeks away from school. In our final photo on A3, Mason Boonerkamp, 5, and Emily Boonerkamp of Forsyth read a book together in the Children's Department of the Decatur Public Library after signing up for the summer reading program. Alyssa Pilmer brought sons Abel, 5, and 3-year-old Eris to the event, and she said they particularly enjoy Disney and audiobooks. This is our first summer in the program, Pilmer said. We did the winter reading program, where the ladies came and read them books and stories. The mobile zoo was a big draw, she said, and the boys enjoyed meeting the various animals. Now from local news. Summertime means it's tick time. Here are 5 most common in Illinois and how to avoid them. From Brendan Sanders, Jacksonville Journal-Courier. Springfield. With warm weather taking over Illinois, tick season is beginning to take place across the state. There are a number of tick species found in Illinois, with the Illinois Department of Public Health stating there are upward of 15 different species in the state, though humans will only typically come in contact with a few species. Here are the five main tick species in Illinois with data provided by IDPH. American dog tick. One of the most frequently encountered ticks is the American dog tick, also sometimes known as the wood tick. The Lone Star tick, primarily found in the southern half of Illinois, although it can occasionally be found further north. The black-legged tick, the deer tick, has been found sporadically in many Illinois counties. The brown dog tick. The brown dog tick, also known as the kennel tick, is found throughout most of the United States. It rarely bites people. The winter tick is a species that feeds on large mammals like deer, cattle, and horses. The winter tick attaches itself to the host as a larva and remains attached throughout its life. Consequently, this tick is rarely encountered by campers or hikers. For a complete description of each of these five types of ticks, see the in-print version of the Decatur Herald and Review. Tips for preventing tick bites and tick-borne diseases. Wear protective clothing such as long-sleeved shirts, long trousers, boots, or sturdy shoes, and a head covering. Apply insect repellent containing 10% to 30% DEET, DEET, primarily to clothes. Apply sparingly to exposed skin. Do not spray directly onto the face. Spray the repellent onto hands and then apply to the face. Walk in the center of trails so weeds do not brush against you. In camping areas, individuals who sit on the ground or disturb leaf litter on the forest floor may encounter ticks. Check yourself, children, and other family members every 2 to 3 hours for ticks. Most ticks seldom attach quickly and rarely transmit disease organisms until they have been attached for 4 or more hours. Now from our public safety column, shots fired on Division Street. Police responded to calls about multiple shots being fired Sunday afternoon in the 1300 block of East Division Street in Decatur. Written reports from the Decatur Police Department quote residents as hearing up to 8 gunshots about 3:50 p.m., the same time a red sport utility vehicle peeled out of the road at a high rate of speed. But patrol officers on scene were not able to locate any spent shell casings, and there were no reports of injuries or bullet damage to houses and property. Again from Decatur, teen robbed a VR headset. Police say that grim reality intruded on virtual reality when a Decatur teenager was robbed at knife point of his virtual reality headset. Reports from Decatur Police Department patrol officers say the 14-year-old victim was using the headset about 5 p.m. Sunday in the 1000 block of West Sunset Avenue when he was accosted. The suspect is described as a 15-year-old Decatur boy who threatened the victim with a knife and knocked him down during the robbery, causing minor injuries. Police caught up with the suspect a short time later, and he was arrested on a charge of armed robbery and given a notice to appear in court. Driver threatened with gun, police say. A female driver was menaced with a handgun by another driver in a strange encounter on a Decatur street, police report. Detective Sergeant Benjamin Massey said the woman was heading along Home Park Avenue around 6:22 p.m. Monday, when the other vehicle driven by a male driver crossed her path at the intersection. The other driver is alleged to have pointed a handgun at the female driver, said Massey. Both vehicles stopped and the two drivers got out. The driver of the suspect vehicle is then quoted as saying, "My bad," and gets back into their car and leaves, Massey added. The woman driver told police she had no idea why this happened, and Massey, asked by the Herald and Review if the whole encounter might be a case of mistaken identity, replied, "Yeah, maybe." And now from Tony Reed, Decatur. Worker admits wounding boss. The fast food Decatur burger assembler who reacted to criticism of his technique by wounding the restaurant manager with a kitchen knife has taken a plea deal. Emmanuel S. Wiggins, Jr., 24, admitted to charge of aggravated battery when he appeared May 21st in Macon County Circuit Court. A further charge of aggravated battery with a deadly weapon was dismissed by Judge Phoebe Bowers. No sentence was imposed, and the judge said she was postponing any punishment to allow Wiggins the chance to complete the mental health court program. This will keep him out of the regular justice system and could see him emerge with a clean record if he complies with mandated treatment and other court rules. The judge holds the threat of imposing punishment, such as a custodial sentence, if Wiggins fails to complete the mental health court requirements. He was due back in court for a status hearing on Tuesday. A sworn affidavit filed by the Decatur Police Department said Wiggins had been arrested at the Dairy Queen Grill and Chill restaurant, 230 West 1st Drive, on the afternoon of March 24th. The affidavit said the manager of the business had been stabbed, suffering two small puncture wounds, and also sustained additional lacerations and abrasions after Wiggins attacked him in the kitchen. Wiggins became extremely angry with the manager for correcting him on a burger he made wrong, said Officer Joshua Davis, who signed the affidavit. The manager said Wiggins threatened to kill him and grabbed one of the knives in the kitchen hanging on the wall. He said Wiggins attacked him with the knife, swinging it at him, striking him with it approximately three times in the left side and back area. Wiggins had been quoted as telling police the manager was just lucky he didn't kill him. The defendant, who had been held in custody since his arrest, was released from the Macon County Jail after the May 21st court hearing. And as part of his conditions for participating in the mental health court program, he is ordered to stay away from the Dairy Queen restaurant. We'll continue now with news from our national and world news. NPR is suing president over federal funds cuts. Lawsuit says Trump is retaliating against private nonprofit corporation. From the Associated Press in New York. National Public Radio and three of its local stations sued President Donald Trump on Tuesday, arguing his executive order cutting funding to the 246-station network violates their free speech and relies on authority he does not have. This month, Trump instructed the Corporation for Public Broadcasting and federal agencies to cease funding for NPR and PBS either directly or indirectly. The president and his supporters argue their news reporting promotes liberal bias and shouldn't be supported by taxpayers. Retaliation is Trump's plain purpose, the lawsuit says. It was filed in federal court in Washington by NPR and three Colorado entities, Colorado Public Radio, Aspen Public Radio, and KUTE Incorporated, chosen to show the system's diversity in urban and rural areas. The lawsuit says Trump targeted a private nonprofit corporation. It alleges Trump acted to contravene the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, a private nonprofit corporation set up to distribute federal funding to NPR and PBS, which is intended to insulate the system for political interference. Congress appropriated $535 million yearly to CPB for 2025, 26, and 27. Again from the Associated Press in New York, Kennedy changes advice for COVID-19 vaccines. He says shots are not recommended for kids and pregnant women. U.S. Health Secretary Robert F. Kennedy Jr. announced Tuesday that COVID-19 vaccines are no longer recommended for healthy children and pregnant women, a move public health experts question. In a 58-second video posted on social media, Kennedy said he removed COVID-19 shots from the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention's recommendations for those groups. No one from the CDC was in the video, and CDC officials referred questions to Kennedy and the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services. HHS officials did not immediately respond to questions, and no other details were released. U.S. health officials, following recommendations by infectious disease experts, previously urged annual COVID-19 boosters for all Americans ages 6 months and older. Kennedy, a leading anti-vaccine advocate before he became health secretary, decided not to wait for a CDC advisory panel set to meet in June to make recommendations about the fall shots. The announcement raises questions, including whether health insurance companies will keep covering COVID-19 shots and how hard it will be to get them. From Harvard University, federal contracts targeted. Trump administration asks agencies to cancel deals in escalating fight. From the Associated Press, Darlene Superville and Colin Binkley, Washington, D.C. The Trump administration asked federal agencies Tuesday to cancel contracts with Harvard University worth about $100 million, intensifying the president's clash with the nation's oldest and wealthiest university. The government already canceled more than $2.6 billion in federal research grants for the Ivy League school, which pushed back on the administration's demands for changes to several of its policies. A letter sent Tuesday from the General Services Administration, which oversees contracting and real estate for the federal government, directed agencies to review contracts with the university and seek alternate arrangements. The New York Times first reported on the letter. President Donald Trump has railed against Harvard, calling it a hotbed of liberalism and anti-Semitism. The school filed a lawsuit April 21st over the administration's calls for changes to the university's leadership, governance, and admissions policies. Since then, the administration slashed the school's federal funding, moved to cut off enrollment of international students, and threatened its tax-exempt status. The administration identified about 30 contracts across 9 agencies to be reviewed for cancellation, according to an administration official who provided details on condition of anonymity. The contracts total roughly $100 million, according to a senior administration official who spoke on the condition of anonymity to describe internal deliberations. The contracts include executive training for Department of Homeland Security officials, research on health outcomes related to energy drinks, and a contract for graduate student research services. Agencies with contracts that are deemed critical were directed not to halt them immediately, but to devise a plan to transition to a different vendor other than Harvard. The letter applies only to federal contracts with Harvard and not its remaining research grants. Trump laid into Harvard on social media over the weekend, threatening to cut an additional $3 billion in federal grants and give it to trade schools across the U.S. He did not explain details. The president also accused Harvard of refusing to release the names of its foreign students. In a new line of attack, he argued that students' home countries pay nothing toward their education and that some of the countries are not at all friendly to the United States. In international news from Gaza, food distribution turns chaotic. Israeli troops fire shots as crowds overwhelm new aid hub in Gaza. From Mohammed Jaju and Sami Magdi. Chaos erupted on the second day of aid operations by a new U.S.-backed group in Gaza as desperate Palestinians overwhelmed a center distributing food Tuesday, breaking through fences. Nearby Israeli troops fired warning shots, sending people fleeing in panic. An Associated Press journalist positioned some distance away heard Israeli tank and gunfire and saw a military helicopter firing flares. The Israeli military said its troops fired warning shots outside the center, and control over the situation was established. At least 3 injured Palestinians were seen by the AP being brought from the scene, one of them bleeding from his leg. The Gaza Humanitarian Foundation, which Israel slated to take over aid operations, opened the distribution hub outside Gaza's southernmost city, Rafah, the prior day. The UN and other humanitarian organizations rejected the new system, saying it won't be able to meet the needs of Gaza's 2.3 million residents and allows Israel to use food as a weapon to control the population. They also warned of the risk of friction between Israel's troops and people seeking supplies. Palestinians are desperate for food after nearly 3 months of an Israeli blockade pushed Gaza to the brink of famine. Palestinians at the scene said small numbers of people made their way to the GHF center Tuesday morning and received food boxes. As word spread, hundreds of thousands of men, women, and children walked for miles from the sprawling tent camps along Gaza's Mediterranean coast. To reach the hub, they had to pass through nearby Israeli military positions. At the center, they waited in long, slow lines and fenced-in corridors. 2 people said each person was searched and had their faces scanned for identification before being allowed to receive the boxes. Crowds swelled and turmoil erupted, with people tearing down fences and grabbing boxes. The staff at the site were forced to flee, they said. Crowds were seen running from the site. A few people managed to secure aid boxes containing basic items like sugar, flour, pasta, and tahini, but the vast majority left empty-handed. GHF said staff fell back to allow the crowds to dissipate and then later resumed operations. From our opinion page, answering the call. Our first column from Chris Talgo, young people will defend our nation. Talgo is the editorial director at the Heartland Institute. He wrote this for Inside Sources. Would today's young people answer a call to duty as eagerly as their parents and grandparents did during times of crisis? We've been told today's youth are soft, they're snowflakes. They're addicted to social media, couldn't care less about freedom, and are incapable of the discipline and sacrifices demanded by military service. While some, if not most of that is true, I'm highly optimistic that America's young people would rally to the cause if needed. Starting with the most basic and relevant statistic, military recruitment data, the numbers show a surge that President Donald Trump's victory in the 2024 election has bolstered. The U.S. Army has met its recruit and reenlistment goals this year, well before the September 30th deadline. The Space Force and Air Force are also receiving strong recruitment bumps. So is the Navy. Defense Secretary Pete Hegseth attributes the rise in recruitment to Trump ordering the military to get back to basics, cut the diversity, equity, and inclusion nonsense, and refocus on combat readiness. When the military carries out its core mission and doesn't waste time and resources on DEI training seminars, more recruits want to enlist. Go figure. Not that long ago, I was a public high school teacher. One thing I will never forget is the dedication and integrity of so many young men and women in the Junior Reserve Officers Training Corps. Though they weren't perfect, they were leaders in and out of the classroom. Many were first-generation immigrants who were proud to be American citizens. Believe it or not, large numbers of high schoolers, especially in semi-suburban and rural towns in the South, are patriotic and would fight for this country if they were called to do so. Things look bright for the future. While many Americans of current service age are less than ideal, considering their physical abilities coupled with their lack of mental toughness, the Make America Healthy Again movement seems to be gaining momentum. The MAHA movement seems to make children physically healthier by reducing their vast intake of highly processed junk food while advocating for more indoor activity. The movement recognizes that a generation of young people has been sickened by ultra-processed foods and poisoned by doom-scrolling on social media. They've seen the damage of digital obsession and want to ensure their children aren't overexposed to screens and social media. The MAHA movement, though not politically aligned, espouses a patriotic message, which resonates with many mothers who voted for Trump in 24. This bodes well for the future of America's defense prowess, knowing that a generation of physically and mentally capable young people is waiting in the wings. Last, it would be a mistake to underestimate the rush of patriotism that would almost inevitably occur if the United States were attacked and provoked into a war. We saw a classic case of this in the hours, days, and weeks after Japan's attack on Pearl Harbor, when hundreds of thousands of teenagers enlisted. A similar patriotic phenomenon occurred in the days, weeks, and months after September 11, 2001. I had just graduated from high school and began my freshman year in college. When I heard that a few of my high school friends had joined the military after the attack, I was shocked. I never thought any of them would wind up in the military. If the United States is ever attacked, as it was on December 7, 1941, or September 11, 2001, I have no concern that America's young and brave will do everything they can to protect their families and homeland. But if China were to invade Taiwan, I doubt there would be mass support among young Americans to fight. Young Americans don't want to be the world police, and they should not be used as such. We'll read the second column in the opinion page from Richard D. Kallenberg in part two of our reading today. In our food section today, we have recipes for two delicious-looking bundt cakes. The first, a bright citrus and sweet strawberries, make for a deliciously sweet dessert. From Gretchen McKay, the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette. My go-to source for cake recipes has always been Martha Stewart, because she makes even complicated recipes seem easy. This awesome bundt cake caught my eye because of the summery addition of citrus. The moist, sour, cream-rich batter is brightened with fresh lemon juice and zest. I also thought it would pair well with a giant bucket of local strawberries I planned on turning into sauce or conserve. The fact both the cake and sauce disappeared in just a couple of days proved I was right. And our second recipe is an easy two-bowl chocolate cake getting its shine from a show-stopping glaze. From Diane Rawson Worthington, the Tribune Content Agency. This mocha glazed chocolate bundt cake is the one I go to when I'm in a hurry and want a chocolatey result with minimal fuss and cleanup. And it will satisfy the chocoholic at your table as well as the coffee lover. The cake is moist from adding oil to the batter and extra chocolatey with the chocolate chips added to the batter just before baking. For the complete recipes, instructions, ingredients, see the in-print version of the Decatur Herald and Review. From Washington, D.C., U.S. government, tax bill to gut clean energy. Trump plan would kill Biden tax credits. From Matthew Daly, Alexis St. John, and Matthew Brown, Associated Press. The multi-million dollar tax breaks package passed by House Republicans last week would gut clean energy tax credits that Democrats approved 3 years ago while supporting increased mining, drilling, and other traditional energy production. The 1,100-plus page legislation curbs billions of dollars in spending across food assistance, student loans, Medicaid, and action to address climate change. The bill, which is headed to the Senate, repeals or phases out more quickly clean energy tax credits passed in the 22 Inflation Reduction Act during former President Joe Biden's term. Biden's climate law has been considered monumental for the clean energy transition, but the House bill effectively renders moot much of the law's incentives for renewable energy such as wind and solar power. Clean energy advocates said the bill walks back the largest government investment in clean energy in history. In a bid to cut taxes for billionaires and provide a grab bag of goodies to big oil, the majority in the House took a sledgehammer to clean energy tax credits and to the protection of our public lands, said Christy Goldfuss, executive director of the Natural Resources Defense Council. These investments are delivering billions of dollars in new investments in homegrown American energy, creating jobs, lowering energy costs, and addressing the climate crisis that is fueling floods, fires, and heat waves, Goldfuss said. President Donald Trump celebrated the bill's passage, calling it arguably the most significant piece of legislation that will ever be signed in the history of our country. Trump appealed to the Senate to pass the measure as soon as possible and send it to his desk. The Senate hopes to wrap up its version by early July. At least four Republican senators, led by Lisa Murkowski of Alaska, have urged continuation of energy tax credits, including support for traditional and renewable energy sources. Republican-led states and congressional districts have benefited from billions of dollars in clean energy manufacturing investments spurred by the Biden-era subsidies. Full-scale repeal of current credits could lead to significant disruptions for the American people and weaken our position as a global energy leader, the senators said in a letter to Senate Majority Leader John Thune, Republican South Dakota. A wholesale repeal or the termination of certain individual credits would create uncertainty, jeopardizing job creation in the energy sector and across our broader economy, the senators wrote in the April 9th letter. The letter was also signed by GOP Senators John Curtis of Utah, Tom Tillis of North Carolina, and Jerry Moran of Kansas. In a win for House moderates and some Western lawmakers, the House bill strips language that would have allowed the sale of hundreds of thousands of acres of public lands in Utah and Nevada. Opponents argued the sales would have opened the door for more oil and gas drilling. The House bill takes an axe to tax credits for rooftop solar installments and eliminates electric vehicle tax credits after 2025, with a one-year exception for EVs manufactured by automakers that have sold fewer than 200,000 cars that qualified for the credit. Credits for solar and electric vehicles, which reduce harmful emissions, help to boost demand for the technologies and drive down their cost. This bill threatens the clean energy industry at a time when it's proving to be not only economical beneficial, lowering costs, creating jobs, and fueling local economies, but also essential to America's energy future, said Andrew Reagan, president of Clean Energy for America, an industry group. This reading is an excerpt of the entire article. For the full article, please see the in-print version of the Decatur Herald and Review. We'll take a short break now and return with the second half hour of the Decatur Herald and Review for Wednesday, May 28th. Please stay tuned.